Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. I mean, what more can you say? Matthews and Marner, I know it's against Ottawa, and you do have to apply the asterisk a little bit, but they're dancing, man.
Man, I laughed, actually, when he scored the first one yesterday. And my first thought was, again?
Right.
Like, it's like every game.
It's a machine.
Man, it's... So, I'm not going to quickly turn this into McDavid and Matthews, but these two guys are, you know, and Marner, too, they're turning the league into, like they're playing bantam hockey. Like, they get 2 points a game. Matthews scores every game.
Feels that way.
I can't believe what we're watching from these guys. Like, the dominance, and yeah, it is Ottawa, and Ottawa looked terrible. Like, they had no fight. They couldn't get anywhere close to a save, you know, once Murray got in there. My goodness. But
like, oh. We talked about it earlier. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was like that was something to watch. But it's just really amazing to watch. Like, that line, they look like they're having the most fun. Like, when they score, like, they score again. You know, like, Matthews scores that goal. The goal yesterday when Thornton had the screen, and he kind of, you know, he does the thing where he doesn't really smile, but he scored. And then as soon as he sees Thornton, he breaks out into this like they're having so much fun. It's like, it's really awesome to watch. It's fun to watch.
It is. And you're right about how quickly he got on the board last night. I didn't have the game on yet. Like, I got upstairs, I had dinner, I got my kids. My dad sent me a text. He just said, Matthews again. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, the game, how far into the game are we? And this guy's already lighting the lamp. It's every single night.
And when you're on the other side of that, and your team isn't very good, and you give up the early one, and you're trying to muster some internal fight, and you just don't have it. Like, you just, what fight are you going to muster up? Like, that game was over, it felt like, almost right away. And then, Stutzla scores from I don't know where. And you're like, oh, maybe. And then.
That was a weird one.
Oh, man. And then all of a sudden they go down and score again. They, we better get another one. They're rolling along. Just think, one bad game and all the, you know, the nervousness came out again. But this has been quite a while where they have played really good hockey, like good hockey, good enough hockey on most nights to beat just about anybody.
Yeah, and the standings would indicate that, right? Like, they're 12, what did I just say, 12,
13,
3 and 2?
13, 13, 3 and 1, something
yeah,
like that.
It's
Sorry.
Crazy. I mean, they're not, the two of the losses are against Ottawa.
13, 3 and 2, sorry,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So, you know, again, not to continue to beat a dead horse there, but I think it is something that needs to be acknowledged, at least. But what did you make? We talked about this with Bruce Boudreau, because we all noticed, and I'm sure you noticed it too, that it was about 7 or 8 minutes ago, the game's over, and Keith decides to put Marner with Tavares to basically hook him up. And that, like, always brought this up a couple times. That's the kind of thing you might do, a guy playing his last game, a guy playing his first game, a guy going for a hat trick that would never possibly get it. $11 million John Tavares is getting propped up with 7 minutes to go against the worst team in the league. I think it was a smart play, but it was pretty loud. Like, it was pretty noticeable that that's exactly what was going on.
Yeah, but it tells me and shows me is that it doesn't matter how much money you make. When your confidence goes, no matter what you try and talk yourself into, when you try and, you know, you do interviews and talk to the press and you say, oh, you know, it's coming, I can feel it, and all that stuff, it's right between your ears. Once that goes, you need help. You need somebody to help you. You're clearly not getting it done yourself, and you need something good to happen. When I saw, I had to leave, and so I see the final 7-3, and I just knew it. Like, you know, when you just know something, you know, not like you're a psychic or whatever, but I'm like, Tavares got the seventh goal, guaranteed.
Yep.
It just felt like that was going to be. And so I think it matters because, you know, you scored two, and there are times – man, it doesn't matter what you make or what you play, you think you're never, ever, ever going to score again.
Well, it gets into ugly stages, Raymond. I mean, it goes from, okay, there's some chances there, not really any luck, and then really quality chances stoned by the goaltender. Then you almost get paralyzed where you're like, I can't even touch the puck right now. And then your legs start feeling heavy and you can't move and you're never in position to get the puck. And the whole thing, it really, really turns in, and it just turns into a gong show, and you're screwed. And I always found there was a process to get back out of it. You got to be the first to the rink. You got to get on the bike before everybody else. You got to shoot more pucks, and you got to do everything. Then you're going to go along, and then there's going to be a couple games where you have a bunch of chances and they don't go in. And then you find the next couple of games, you get one, and you're back on track. But going through the process is a complete pain in the ass. A complete pain in the ass.
Because the whole way through it, you know, the one thing I remember always guys saying, oh, don't worry about it, the chances are coming. And I wanted to punch them all right in the nose.
Yeah, who cares?
Like, stop it. Stop it. Nothing's coming. I can see it. Nothing's happening. And so you end up talking yourself right back into that, into the hole that's deep enough that, and it's not like he could rely on his line mates, right? Like, you're in this thing and you can dig yourself out of it, sure. You need help. Man, we know the game's the way it is. John's not the type of player that can take a puck and go 100 feet through the ice and dingle dangle all over the place and tuck one in. It's gonna have to be a different type of play. And, you know, for all the defenders of Nylander, he hasn't played that great either. Well, you know what I noticed for Nylander last night was the breakaway he missed? He looked like he was shot out of a cannon. And I'm like, that looked good. That looked like a guy lighter. And that was right after he had got knocked on his ass and scored. Like, all of a sudden, things start to happen for you. Maybe this late goal will make him feel a little lighter. You know, maybe it'll let him play the game that he's supposed to play, not the game that he's, I got to run around and get a hit and do this and do, like, just play your own game. You got $11 million a year because you can score. But right now, you're so far out of your own game, you don't even look like the same player. And I feel that with Nylander, too, at times. It's like, he doesn't even look like the same guy. And then, boom, he's on the board, and then he's, now all of a sudden, he's skating again. Man, it's funny. I don't know why it always works that way or seems to work that way, but it sure does.
Let me, I got two things, but I just want to climb on this one. And I want the whole, you know, all of us to weigh in on. What is William Nylander to you guys? Because I kind of sit back and I see, you know, the lovers and I see the haters of him, and, you know, they're somewhere in between. But what, you know, for what he's paid and what you believe, what is he? Like, is he a 60-point guy? Is he a 70-point guy? Is he a goal scorer? Is he a playmaker? Is he a power play specialist? Is he, like, what do you see when William Nylander is at his best? And what would you like to see when he's even not scoring but more consistent of?
Ray, go ahead.
I think he's a 25-plus, 65-plus guy. That might not sound like a lot, but that's, you know, 65-plus is in the 70-point range. I see that for him all the time. When I watch him, I'm like, I think he should do that every year. Mm-hmm. I think he should score 25 goals falling out of bed. With his shot and his speed and his strength, I think it should be there. When he's not, when he's playing, I see somebody that when they carry the puck, there's intent. Like, he's confident, he's moving quickly, but he's got his head up and he's always making a play, whether it's with his legs or because he's a great passer too. When he doesn't have it, I want to see him skate a little more. I think when he loses his game, he stops skating and he watches. Mm-hmm. And you take away a big chunk of his toolbox, which is those million-dollar legs, and he doesn't use them. That's what I see when he struggles. When he's playing, man, he covers the ice, and he covers it with the puck, and he makes people worried. He makes people back up. He opens up the ice for his teammates, and he can shoot the thing.
And I find Ray, his best game, I think he's that number is a 3. It starts with a 3. I think it should be 30 goals in his sleep. And much like we talked about Austin Matthews in the past, and maybe this will come to Nylander, His B game is not very good, to say the least. His A plus is dynamite. It's a lethal shot. It's incredible skating. It's playmaking. It's a shot that's violent. Like, he rips it under the bar. A goaltender's like, oh, my God, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
And there's no chance. It's just the goaltender has no chance on it. But when it goes right to his B game, the B almost goes right to F, where it's like, man, it's just there's no fight in it. You gotta stay involved and work through things, as opposed to saying, well, not tonight, not really happening. So his A-plus game is as good as anybody. It's Pasternak-like. It's all those guys that are dynamic, that score goals. But the difference is the fall-off between the A-game and the B-game, and that is the major difference between him and a player like Pasternak.
Yep, I can't disagree with any of that. I think what you just hit there is important, because
yeah,
you're not going to have your A-game every night. You guys know that. What are you going to have, your A-game, like 30 games a year? You know,
it's
like
82 games. I told you the Ronnie Francis breakdown. You're looking to have 65 A-plus games, man, if you can. And that's stretching
it. It's a lot.
It is a lot, man. Then you have 10 stinkers, and then you have 5 where you don't even want to watch the tape and you throw it in the garbage. That's kind of the breakdown. But those 60 or 65, you got to be damn good. That's what you're paid to do. It's like me on the radio. I like Monday through Thursday. I like to be zoomed in, dialed in. I could care less what happens on Friday.
Well, you,
that's
when
how
you're,
I do my business.
But when you're on your game, your A is your A. But when you're on your B, it's a big drop off to
is.
F. Like, that's
you're the new one.
And then you've got cats crawling all over the bloody place. And, like, who's running the show? That's the B game.
Hayes, I don't think you've been good today, so I don't think you're in any position to call.
I got a B game, though. I live in the B game.
He opened the show saying he was tired because he shoveled the driveway twice. The only thing that shot him a Red Bull in the arm was you talking about golfing.
Yep.
Together,
you saying,
right?
I was a 9 handicap. All of a sudden,
Ray, you
boom,
should see
I'm
what
A+.
This loser did yesterday. Although I kind of respect it because the shoes are so nice, but he went to down in his basement and he put his golf shoes on to chip. Like, that's how bad this guy wants to play golf. The golf shoes on the feet to chip.
Now, were you working on balance there? Like, what was going on, Hayes?
Honestly, Ray, it was spontaneous. It wasn't a plan. It's not like I got up that morning saying, shoes on, and I'm working on my short game here. I was just, you know, tinkering in the storage room, and I was doing inventory. Because I'm thinking, I got to, you know, you start loading up on golf balls and gloves. You start preparing for the season, even though it's still probably a month and a half or 2 months away. And I have a pair of shoes that I'm looking forward to wearing that I have not worn yet. And I'm like, I'll slip these on. And I got them on. I'm like, I might as well take a couple shots. Next thing you know, I'm literally chipping in the basement with golf shoes on. It's the most pathetic thing I think I've done.
Dude, if you have a garage haze, it's just, it's got to happen where you get the Master Sim, you got Augusta, you got Pebble Beach. Like, the go-kart can stay out in the driveway.
Yeah, it's out there anyway. You're right.
Yeah, just get the Sim going for next year. You can have
Tux over
there.
It's something I got to look into. I looked into it earlier. Like, they're expensive, man. If you want to get the top of the line, like, across the board where you're playing Augusta and Pebble and stuff like that, it's not
cheap
to throw that up. But
I'll go half.
Okay, well, there we go. Maybe we can start doing that. Just get everyone to pitch in, and I'll just open up the house. Club
Hayes,
program.
Get the neighbor time over with the Ryan Cokes.
I love that.
But just think, the last time Hayes did something like this, it was an illegal casino. Pretty soon you're going to be betting on the Sim. There's going to be, guys are going to be making prop bets out there. And
yeah.
Hayes,
well,
this leads down a dark road for
there'll
you,
be a sting. Yeah. There'll be a vice.
Guess who hates the
after
simulator
me?
In the garage and buddies coming over all the time? The wife. The wife hates simulator guy that drinks beer all day long in his garage.
Well, it's a full commitment. Like, it's not a 4-hour round, but if you're going to play 18 and, like, you got to force them out there, you're probably out there for 2 hours playing.
Dude, you know what happens is you get that. We've talked about this before at length. The guy, the golf guy in the bar that played the spin game with the ball. What was that game called?
Golden Tee.
Golden Tee guy that drinks 9 beers at lunch and plays 14 games with his buddy, that you turn into that guy.
Yeah, wow. That is, I've witnessed that many times. Golden Tee guy.
We all know
you want a sign of being single. When I played in Calgary, my first time around in Calgary, I had a golden tea machine in my living room.
Ooh, that's unreal. The boys must have been sleeping on the couch.
I had rented this townhouse, and I had a golden tea, a few other, Buck Hunter, Big Buck Hunter.
Yeah,
I had a couple others.
That was a quality game.
I went to an arcade store and bought these arcade games and had them at the house. And then, you know, it was a great place for the boys to come over and have a few drinks and stuff. But I had a golden tea in my living room.
We had in Binghamton, I don't know if you guys ever played in Binghamton.
Yeah.
Across the street from the rink was this pub called Funzie's. And we'd go to practice and then go to Funzie's for lunch. And they had golden tea, but they also had this game. It was like a decathlon game. And it was all Olympic events. And we'd start playing, and there was a way you could make yourself run faster by putting a pencil between the two controllers, and you just hit the pencil really fast, and your guy would run
hammer
faster.
Hammer it, I remember that.
So we'd start playing, and pretty soon you're playing, and you're playing, and you're playing, and then somebody looks up and goes, hey, it's 5 o'clock, and you've got to... Like, we just went there after practice, and there's a whole bunch of empties up there. You've been playing video games for 3 hours or 4 hours, and then you just have dinner, and then you go home. Like, we accomplished nothing.
That's awesome.
But damn, those games were fun.
So much fun, wouldn't it be? Like, that's the kind of stuff you'd cherish. And like, athletes, you guys would know that if you're young and you got a little bit of money. If you're in the minors, you're not exactly making a fortune.
Right.
But you got enough to kill some time. And if you guys you're just waiting for practice the next day, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there's nothing to do, right?
Nothing to do.
That stuff with Noodles, when you're talking about the golden tea in your house, I'm like, yeah, you were in the NHL. We had to stay in the pub because nobody could afford one.
Well,
but, man, what a game.
Awesome,
what a game.
Man. Awesome.
The minors, though, I mean, I played in Troy, New York. Our minor league team was gritty. That's where it was at. RPI College was from there.
Right.
And that was a scary... There was a bar called the El Dorado downtown. And we would go in there, and like, it was kind of our hangout. But all
sounds
of a sudden...
dangerous.
I'll never forget.
Even the name,
exactly.
The El Dorado.
All of a sudden,
dangerous.
You're sitting there one day, and the cops stormed the place, and they dragged the cook out. He was on the America's Most Wanted. He was top 10.
No way.
We'd been hanging out at this place for all season long. And apparently the cook was like a murderer or something.
It's a good thing you didn't eat in there ever. You just drank beers.
All but could fire up the wings. That's all that mattered.
Exactly.
Right?
It was crazy, though. I just remember, like, these gritty little bars. Troy, New York.
Troy, New York.
Scary,
and one of
the
10 most wanted Americans was in there. 10 most wanted was in there every day with you guys.
Yep, no worries.
That show was terrifying. America's Most Wanted. Imagine you watch that, you saw that, and then all of a sudden that guy is actually in your life. Like, you watch John Walsh is like, he never never solved it. Got away. They believe he's in upstate New York, and there's Noodles just crushing a club.
Guy's
standard.
Walking out a plate of wings to our table.
I'd have a heart attack. I would actually faint. I'd be like, this guy's going to kill me.
I can picture his face. Like, I actually, I can picture his face.
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, weird now, but... I was like 19, 20 years old.
It'd be such a great
pro.
Like podcast idea, and I'm sure this kind of stuff probably is out there, books and all that.
Yeah.
Of just former players who would kill time. I remember golfing. I had the luxury of golfing with our guy Bob Nevin, who passed away recently. And Bob Nevin was awesome, and spent the day golfing with him. He didn't pick up a club. He just waited until 11 a.m. so he could order a beer. It was amazing. And he was telling stories about they'd practice at the Gardens when he was with the Leafs, and just immediately out for lunch with the boys. They'd be up at the track, like, every day. It's like we just kill time, basically, until practice the next day.
I couldn't get over when somebody first asked me. I was like, it might have been Glenn Featherstone in Hartford. He was like, want to go play some pool and have some beers after practice? I was like, I was 19. I'd never done I'd never had lunch and wings. And, like, had beers and shot pool. I'm like, what is that all about? And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, this is kind of cool,
this
man.
This is awesome. Yeah.
And then it's
you remember
like
where Chuck's was?
What?
You remember Chuck's, right?
Yeah.
In Hartford? go up after practice, and I'll never forget this. We had a veteran guy that we picked up in a trade, and he'd sit at the bar and eat lunch and have a couple beers and, you know, BS and eat. And the guy's wife would call asking for him, and he'd just, with his right hand, he'd have his beer in his left. He'd just go, nah. You know, he'd just wave, like, I'm not here. So he'd finish lunch, and then he'd go home. It happened, like, all the time, and you just laugh. You'd like, wow, I guess this is what lunch is, right?
Yep, that's lunch, man. Before cell phones, you couldn't really reach anyone. You couldn't find anyone. You could escape.
There was some dedicated soldiers, man. It didn't matter, on the road, at home. It was like, I'm going for lunch, and I'm having my pints, and I'm having my wings, and this is my time.
I played in the minors, and we would practice off-site. Like, we would practice at a different rink. So, you know, as a player, you get half-dressed, and then you drive to the rink. Well, on the way home, some veteran guys would stop. So I would, like, I'm getting a ride with two guys who have close to 1,000 games in the league. And I'm wearing my pants, my skates and everything are in the bag. And we stop at a place called Josephina's. Yeah, we're going in for one. I'm like, what? I'm all sweaty. We were there for 3 hours. Yeah. Like the trainer's calling, going like, oh, the guys are at Josie's again. Like, can you get back here so we can wash the gear? So, like, we're sitting in our gear at the bar.
It's such a hockey name for a place, Josephina's.
Oh, yeah. Such a great place. That place knew us inside and out. But that was a first for me, being a young guy. That league, I mean, the old IHL, that's what it was. It was NHL players on the way out, making some good money, and young kids coming up.
Just great.
What was the dump by the LAX airport? It was like...
Melodies.
Guys, I think the amount of that place should just be picked up and thrown in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
There wasn't one window in the place. You'd go in there, no idea what time it was.
I remember being in practice, like in LA or Anaheim, as a younger guy, and guys would be like, I wouldn't be included in any of their plans, but it's like maybe hit Melodies for a couple pints, then maybe tee it up, and it's like this place, Melodies. It's like, why the hell are you going there?
In Vegas or in L.A. too, right?
Yeah, you're in California, Los Angeles, in this place called The Melody. It's like, oh, my God.
That was a gritty place. Somehow I don't think the guys find those gritty places as much anymore.
No, I'm not sure it's happening, and certainly not this
year. I'm going to leave on this story because it involves one of O's favorite people, and that's Kevin Dineen. And we had to practice out in West Hartford, which was about 20 minutes away. And so Noodles already described, you'd be half-dressed, your other gear would be in your bag in the back of your trunk. You'd drive out to practice, come home. So you're basically in half your gear. Some of the guys would be still wearing their helmets as they're driving back home. So it turned into somehow like we all wanted to race back to get there first. One day I come around the corner, the last corner before the parking lot, go down the ramp to the parking garage.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's two cars smashed together. And there's six Hartford Whaler guys in their gear out looking at the damage. Kevin thought he had the inside lane on Billy Gardner, and somebody ran their car into the front of the other. And there are six of these knuckleheads with their practice jerseys on, the big whale on the front, our helmets on. And there's our team sitting there like... It's just like,
amazing. It's like a NASCAR movie. It's like a pit stop for NASCAR, only in vintage Whaler
people
gear.
People are walking by, People are walking by on their lunch hour.
I love it.
There was Kevin, with his helmet on.
He had the inside
the
lane.
Damage.
Had the inside lane. It probably cost them each like $2,500, if not more in damage and insurance. Just awesome. I love that. Well, we'll leave it there on that high, and we'll do it again Monday at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, have a good weekend, guys.
All right, buddy. There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. If you're looking to lower your car payments, downsize your vehicle, or trade in two cars for one, visit MapleToyota.com or book an in-person appointment.